This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
And I'm Bill Cloud, the Chief Medical Officer of the Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Well, folks, we are very blessed today. We're excited. We have Fabrice Bernard, and Fabrice is the author of Lean Tech Manifesto. I know a lot of y'all are already familiar with that book, especially if you're involved with the Lean Enterprise Institute. You're very familiar with that. But we want to talk to Fabrice about the book, about his thinking, and about some of the work that he's involved with. But before we jump too quickly, Fabrice, would you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and about your background?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me here. So my name is Fabrice Bernard. I'm the co-founder of a tech consultancy called Theodo. We're about 800 people now. And we've been going since 2009. And to give you a bit of background on why the book exists, there were really two key moments in our growth journey. A first key moment when we discovered Agile software development. And it was really an amazing discovery for us because we went from finding work difficult to really enjoying it much more and making clients way happier and having much healthier margins. So really like all three dimensions at the same time, you know, clients, people and profits going much better. And that fueled very fast growth. Happy clients, you know, usually generate growth. And then the question immediately became, how do we keep that amazing recipe alive as we grow? And we were lucky to meet a lean expert at the time who told us he'd been through a similar journey, had found some of these answers in lean thinking. And so we started a lean journey back in 2013. We reached a stage a few years ago where we realized we had this unique experience of bringing lean thinking, very, very advanced lean thinking, because we were very lucky to work for some of the best lean experts in the world in this domain of software engineering. And we thought we had to share those learnings. And that's how the Lean Tech Manifesto was born.
Really nice, Fabrice. So when we think about lean and we think about the philosophy and the practicality that goes along with that, how did that marriage come together with your mindset of tech, especially in this day and age when it's very hard to not look at an article? I went to a conference recently, and every single breakout session, every single keynote had two letters in that breakout session, AI. I think it's a natural marriage, but that's my thinking. Tell me about your thinking. How do you think about this new age that we're going into with AI and how it connects itself with really solid lean thinking?
Well, I guess I'll answer like on two dimensions. The first one is, you know, we found it very natural to bring lean thinking to tech because we came from this agile background, and agile is all about how do I organize my teams on innovation projects. And therefore, you know, when you dig into agile and you realize that agile's roots go back to lean thinking, then, you know, it's very natural to be, okay, I want to get all these benefits of managing innovation projects the right way, but at scale. And that's how that's what we found in lean thinking, which is very interesting because it's a very different kind of route and channel that most people have with lean thinking, where they usually take it from lean manufacturing. And so these see this opposition between a factory where, you know, everything is processed, standardized and repeated, and usually, you know, brings you to a lean branch called Lean Six Sigma. And they don't see the direct link with something that will be much more about innovation, engineering, creativity. That, you know, they don't see that direct link. But we saw it because we went through a different route, which was first through Agile and then looking at the roots of Agile, discovering that lean thinking was there. So that's very interesting. And, you know, having researched that for a long time, I really, when you look at what is Toyota's secret, from the point of views of some of the best senseis, it's not the manufacturing part. The secret is in the engineering part. And so that's why actually it's a very good match. So that's part one of the answer. And then part two is, you know, AI is an amazing innovation, and it's not only like a groundbreaking innovation, but it also like is different in the sense that it touches at the thinking itself. So that creates, new dynamics. But there is one reality, which is that nobody knows what is the right thing to do. And so this learning organization aspect of lean thinking is incredibly relevant. And I'll just give you one anecdote, very recent. We had a leadership team visiting our offices this morning and asking, okay, how do you organize your software teams around AI? And I told them, it sounds a bit like the first Americans going to visit Toyota, taking photos and, documenting everything, bringing it back to the US, implementing it, having a few challenges, going back to Japan and saying, how do you do that actually? And then the Japanese saying, well, we don't do that anymore. We changed everything since last year. And, and then people realizing the secret is not the way you do it, but it's the learning culture that allows you to adapt constantly. And I think for AI, it's the same. People like trying to understand what we do right now with AI will only get the current photo when what is very interesting about the way we work is the lean thinking culture that allows you to constantly adapt and learn. And every time there's a new model, discover like the positives and the drawbacks.
Really good. I have so many questions I want to ask, but instead of being selfish, I'm going to see Bill. Any thoughts?
Well, this is part of a discussion that Skip and I had this morning. The present fascination with AI, I did general surgery as a career, and it is very reminiscent of what in medical science we call publication bias. And that is, you have a lot of people who say, gosh, this AI works really great for us, and so we're going to get the word out there. And then when you start using it, and this is something Skip and I have already realized, that there's a learning curve in how to use it, and it doesn't always turn out good. So you have to experiment with it. Now, nobody's going to publish bad results, right? So the first model that comes out, everybody gloms onto, then it fails, and nobody discusses that until it actually reaches a critical mass of failure. And then people will start, well, we don't do that anymore. We do this, but it never actually gets uncovered for what the limitations are.
No, and it's I mean, what you're saying is I find it incredibly fascinating. And indeed, we're completely in this moment of history where things are so uncertain, but people have a huge incentive to publish positive results. Some publish real results, but that are true in a certain, environment. Some people just, lie blatantly. So it's a very different landscape to navigate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fabrice, I'm going to do something real time. I want to just kind of give you my thoughts, and I'd love for you to either pick them apart or tell me what you think, or if you agree, that's fine. But if you disagree, that's okay too. Where I'm at on my AI journey is it's being interwoven with my AI journey is being interwoven with my lean thinking. So for example, I'll give you just a funny example that Dr. Cloud and I did recently. We were working on a proposal for something. It didn't really matter what it was. And we felt pretty good about it, but we still felt like it had that AI smell all over it, right? We wanted it to sound more like a human. And so we gave it a prompt. We said, rewrite this thing and write it as if you were Ernest Hemingway. And what we didn't expect to happen, because we gave such a loose prompt, is it literally tried to come back with a novel, and it was very high level. Once upon a time, there was this, and we laughed about it. But what we learned is that we wouldn't have treated certain experiments that loose, but we were, in some respects, we were asking AI to be like a magic wand. And so one of the things that I'm learning, Fabrice, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is let's not make AI a magic wand, and let's not make technology, but let's find where it can team up with our natural patterns of work. And through the natural patterns of work, can AI or technology help make that faster or more impactful or more defect-free or whatever it is we're trying to accomplish? But we still have to have good thinking. In other words, what is it I'm trying to accomplish? And can technology play a part in that? And my mind goes to where Toyota used to be at years ago when robots first came in factories. They looked at robots, from my understanding, as a countermeasure. You know, instead of the answer that's going to solve all the problems, it's a potential countermeasure. Let's see how it works in this experiment. But what do you think about all that?
No, I think you're pointing at a very, very important, you know, initial idea that I think is very important right now with AI. AI comes as some kind of mandate from the board, from the shareholders, I mean, from very high up, and therefore it gets implemented just for the sake of being implemented. And clearly what lean thinking teaches you, or you know, what we asked as the first principle of lean tech is value for the customer. If it's driven by value for the customer, then you know you get both validated learnings, but you also get a lot better engagement from the teams. And just to give you like a very concrete example in our own consultancy, when AI arrived, we thought this is going to be transformational for us. Clearly, software engineering is going to be one of the first industries that is going to be completely transformed. The most skeptical were the most senior software engineers in the organization, and for very good reason. When you work on real life projects, coding is not the bottleneck. It's usually getting like, you know, business stakeholders to agree on what they want. It's getting, you know, IT departments to open up the right APIs and databases. These are the bottlenecks, and coding, whether you code faster, is not going to make a huge difference or any difference at you know, the scale of a real life project. So we thought, okay, we need to experiment with AI, but you know, we need to find a use case where the value will be obvious, both because our learnings will be better and also because the senior engineers who will then participate in this will be like, oh yeah, okay, in this case, I agree. And we found in our industry that rewriting legacy software was one such use case, where clearly there were a lot less bottlenecks on business decisions because you're taking the system and you're redoing it. And there were a lot less bottlenecks on, you know, IT dependencies, et cetera. And so all of a sudden you were really in a subset of use cases where AI made a difference. And the result is that we've learned a lot. We've been able to go 3 times faster, you know, at really the value level. And that's been amazing, of course, in terms of business, because now, you know, a lot of the market knows that we have these learnings, but it's also been amazing in terms of like bringing people on board, that AI was actually useful and not just gimmick. Our learnings are much better and they can be reused everywhere, et cetera. But to go back to your point, if you don't drive it from value for the customer, then you know it's not good thinking, it's not good experimentation, and it's not a countermeasure to a real problem.
Really good, Fabrice. I really like, you know, that line of thinking that, you know, the other thing that's interesting to me is I liked what I heard woven into your story of respect for every individual. We know that's a very important element to lean thinking. We know that good lean thinking is really a socio-technical system, not just a technical, but it's a socio-technical. And that was one of the surprises to me on my journey that I'm on, is where I thought certain age groups or certain people would automatically just adopt the technology. They would embrace it and they would want to run with it. But what I learned was I still needed to prepare the ground. You know, I still needed to show them respect and I needed to invite them in on this experiment. When you think about your large team, was there a similar situation for you?
I would argue this is one of the amazing things about lean thinking is it's, you know, once you demonstrate value, people, I believe that people have good intentions, and when they see the value, then you align everyone and then you can have a debate on where you get there, et cetera. And if you don't work around value, then it becomes a battle of opinions and I don't think it's very productive. And of course, you don't get people on board either. So I must say I'm very happy that we, you know, contrary to some organization, we didn't impose AI adoption to people who were skeptical. We said, fine, you're skeptical. Let's try and understand why. Oh, you're skeptical for very good reasons. I mean, that step was quite fast because we, you know, I trust our senior engineers, and I have a lot of empathy for them. I am myself a software a senior engineer, so I really got where they came from, and it was like, okay, let's try to find a place where it generates value. Let's experiment together, and let's agree that if it generates real value, well, you know, we're okay to change our minds. So.
Love it, Bill. What do you think,
Fabrice? Have you had some examples of, you know, we talked about using AI to make your current work processes easier. Have you had examples where you realized that you needed a different work process through AI, that it wasn't really to make your present process easier, that you really just needed a completely different process?
Now, to really talk about my craft, which is writing software, I think we've started with improving current processes. Mm-hmm. And in lean thinking, I would call that value analysis versus value mm-hmm. engineering. So start by a lot of value analysis where you learn, but on the current systems. And then you start getting the intuitions of what can really change. Mm-hmm. And today, and I'd say about 18 months after having really been intense on our journey to use AI to improve our coding, you know, our coding process, we are starting to really change the way teams are organized, the way the steps are organized. It's not, I wouldn't, I don't, it doesn't feel that radical, but maybe that's because the journey has been, you know, slightly progressive. But yes, there are things that are completely changing. I mean, and typically the rules are changing, but that is actually quite, from, you know, from far away, the process changes. But on the ground for the people, it really changes because we're asking our engineers to be much more involved on the product side. We're asking the product people to change the kind of, the specifications they produce. So yes, it's changed a lot of things now. But that's because we've had, I think, this journey of learning on small issues mm-hmm. that allows mm-hmm. us to now do these big changes.
That's an interesting evolution. It really is.
And that's something, it's as a general principle, I'm really now convinced when people want to change big things, I ask them to first solve a lot of small problems yeah. around that system. Because I'm like, your deep understanding of the system you want to, you know, revolutionize and transform is not deep enough for me to be convinced that you've got the right intuitions. And that's been, you know, that's been basically my motto for the past few years and with big success. So I try to use that everywhere now.
What I love that you're talking about, Fabrice, is that there may be several ways to say it, but Dr. Cloud and I were talking about this morning as we were drinking our morning coffee together, is you still have to have good thinking. In other words, sometimes we treat technology as the magic wand or the answer box, but you still have to approach it with good thinking. And you're using good agile and lean thinking to say, what is it we're trying to accomplish? What is the value that we're trying to put forward? And let's make sure everything else is in service to that versus me just asking a linear question and getting an answer back and just acting. That doesn't make sense. The thing I love, I hear you saying, if I'm hearing you right, is you still have to have really good thinking. And that's where the Lean Tech Manifesto kind of comes in. Is it's not just about technology that's going to solve all of our problems, whether that technology be AI or anything else. That technology has to play a part in the good thinking and what is the value and what in the world are we trying to accomplish? Am I saying that the right way for you?
I mean, yes, for the right way for me, for sure. And there is the optimistic scenario that if we keep on, you know, leveraging good thinking, AI adoption will be amazing. It will really remove some of the most boring tasks we have. It will help us on some creative tasks. It will probably revolutionize life sciences. That's something I'm very excited about. But, you know, Gen AI applied to proteins and these kind of things, I think, will be a fascinating domain. And, of course, the negative side that we need to be aware of and fight back consciously, intentionally, is it will also reduce thinking. What I think this is the craziest thing about this technology is the first time, and it's not the first time, I would say Google was the first step. You know, all of a sudden, instead of having to research a topic, ask experts, call experts, write, read books, all of a sudden we could just ask questions and get an answer. And now We don't even have to parse the answer. We don't have, even have to synthesize it. It's already like all pre-digested. So that's the risk, and that's why I think lean thinking is so relevant today, because we need to keep practicing our thinking the same way people go to the gym to, you know, keep practicing their muscles, despite the fact that we don't work in the fields anymore.
Based on, here's an actual problem that we're dealing with right now, and that is we have an electronic medical record, all right? So there are all kinds of nooks and crannies where patient-related data can be held within an electronic medical record. And so as a physician, if you're going to try and really understand the present clinical condition of the patient, you have a lot of different places that you've got to go within that record to get the data. And so one potential solution is to create an agent that will actually do that search for you, accumulate all that clinical data and present it to you in a really easy to digest manner. But we also know that humans are documenting clinical conditions in the medical record, and many times in different places within the medical record with variable degrees of accuracy. Okay, so when the agent goes to pull this data, what we find is we have to look at the source of the data to determine it's valid to validate the accuracy. So have you noticed issues like that in your work?
It's an interesting one. But what you're pointing at is partly also a product challenge. And I'll give you an example in the medical sector. We helped the French Medical Dictionary, so the reference for all medications in France, prototype an AI solution around their data. And indeed, one of the things we worked super hard on was we would answer the question of the MD directly, but then we would quote the sources, and not even quote them, we would actually like integrate them as windows to the actual dictionary so that you could always double check. And I think in terms of how you engineer this solution, every time there's a potential trust issue, which is, you know, often, I think it's very important to kind of like highlight the source in a way that people really see the difference between what is generated answer and what is like the real source data. And then even then, there is still the risk of lowering, you know, the attention or the risk awareness of the human user. So I guess it's all about experimenting and making sure we making sure it brings some value, because then because if it doesn't, it's not worth the trade-off. And if it brings value, then measuring the trade-offs to improve the solution. I do think, but again, I'm being optimistic. I think if you have this good engineering practice of collecting defects, collecting mistakes, and analyzing them, you will probably end up with a solution that is like better than the current one. But yes, it's a real product challenge, and it requires iterations to get right. And the prototype that's been, you know, vibe coded over the weekend is probably not ready.
Fabrice, the thing I love hearing you talk about is this embracing once again of good thinking. And let's just go with our plan, do, study, adjust thinking, right? Many times we promote that very much in our improvement system. We're going to do things and we expect something to happen. And we like to be very specific in what do we expect to happen. And quite often something completely different happens. And then hopefully we learn. And I think if we have that type of thinking, regardless of the technology, then the journey is going to be so much more enjoyable, you know, because now I'm not looking for this technology to be the answer box. I'm actually, I heard one scientist from Cal Berkeley yesterday say, it's always guessing. Sometimes it's guessing right, and sometimes it's guessing wrong. The technology, but it's always guessing. And he talked about the experiments that he runs where he'll ask it questions that he already knows the absolute answer to see how it responds, you know. And the thing I love hearing you talk about, Fabrice, is this absolute commitment to experimentation. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and there's the absolute commitment in theory, and then the reality on the ground, which is it's not that easy to experiment, and so there's a lot of stuff we do which is not as well measured and observed as I'd like. But clearly every good learning has, you know, happened because we were measuring the outcomes, and therefore that's my key message. The more we experiment the more we use this amazing scientific method, the more we can tame AI and really get the best out of it. And it's very tempting not to.
That is fantastic, Fabrice. I know this conversation kind of went real quickly and we jumped in and AI kind of dominated it, but I want to have all of our listeners go out and pick up Lean Tech Manifesto. I think you would benefit from it. We are in a new age, and how we think about technology, what our relationship is to technology, I think is really important. And Fabrice, I just want to tell you on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for writing your book, Lean Tech Manifesto. And we look forward to continue to learn with you as you move forward one experiment at a time. So grateful for you, Fabrice, and all the work you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very honored, and I hope this conversation has been useful, because what you're doing is amazing. So if it can help you improve.
Thanks so much, Fabrice. It's really been enjoyable. A lot of interesting things to learn about.
Well, thank you.